Hello and welcome to the Dancecast, where I explore dance as an art form, traveling to non-traditional places and with non-traditional doers. I'm your host and my name is Silva Lakkonen. This is episode 1, interview with Mark Brew. Mark Brew is the artistic director and choreographer of Mark Brew Dance Company, as well as the guest artistic director at Axis Dance Company, and associate artistic director at Ballet Gamri. I caught up with Mark at the Axis Summer Intensive this August in Oakland, California, and this is what we were chatting about. Okay, so this is really exciting, Mark. Yay. I have had this idea for a long time to start a podcast talking about dance in an untraditional setting with maybe untraditional dancers. Mm-hmm. And you're my first guest.
Yeah, you're very privileged.
Oh, thank you, thank you. Would you tell everybody a little bit about yourself? I know you're...
Sure.
We're also in the middle of Axis Dance Company Summer Intensive 2016. Mm. So you've been telling about yourself for several days in a row, but... One more time.
Yeah, let me sort of sum it up.
Yes.
So my name's Mark Brew. I'm originally from Australia in a small country town called Jerilderie in New South Wales. All my training began in Australia and I went through a very traditional training. At the age of 11, I went to boarding school to study dance.
Oh, wow.
So I had half dance and then half the day academic. So it was like an arts college. And then when I was 16, I auditioned for the Australian Ballet School. And was accepted, and I did 3 years with the Australian Ballet School. And while I was there, I danced and extraed with the Australian Ballet Company and toured with them as well. And then I moved to South Africa because I always had a fascination to want to go and change the world, and I thought I'd begin in South Africa. And also I'd read the book, The Power of One, and thought, you know, I was inspired by that. And then I went and joined Pact Ballet, which was South Africa's leading classical ballet company based in Pretoria. And so I was there for a year. And then one Saturday afternoon after class, three friends and myself got into a car and went to drive to go to a game reserve to go bushwalking, as you do in Africa. And it just happened that a drunk driver had driven down the wrong way of the off-ramp on the motorway and was on the wrong side of the road, and he had swerved and missed many cars, but unfortunately had hit the car that I was a passenger in. And my three friends were killed, and I survived with a spinal cord injury in my neck at C6-C7 incomplete, and then T1 complete from T1 down, if that means anything to you. But basically I'm paralyzed from the chest down. But initially, after my accident, I had massive internal injuries from that car accident, and I was paralyzed from the neck down. But then gradually started getting some movement back into my arms, and then worked on that. And then once my internal injuries had sort of stabilized, they discovered that I had my spinal cord injury. And then once I became stable with my spinal cord injury and my internal injuries, they transferred me back to Australia. Which is where I went through my rehabilitation, which was about 4 to 6 months. And then I had to go through the process about what did dance mean for me, because a lot of people told me I had to go back and retrain and do something else. You know, you couldn't be a dancer, you know, who's disabled, or a dancer who used a wheelchair. And I had never been exposed through my traditional training to anybody with a disability at all. So it was a whole new world. I feel like a song is going to break out now. A whole new world. A lot of my friends were dancers. So before I knew it, they sort of got me back in the studio, and I started exploring what I could do. And also, you know, rehabilitation and exercise was something I was used to. So I sort of took it on as a challenge. Thought, okay, I'm going to do the best I can do with the body I have now. And, you know, I then... got back into teaching dance and ways that I could deliver that information through direction, through speaking, through demonstration, through my arms, as well as giving imagery. And so I started developing my vocal skills in teaching, as well as my demonstration in other ways. So I then had to learn about, you know, thinking outside the square box of what I had originally trained as, and the way that I had perceived, and through my training, the way that a dancer should be. And it made me realize actually that dance isn't about the so-called perfect body or being on two legs, that dance was in us, and I think it's in us all, and I think we can all find ways to express our body through our bodies in different ways. So that really set me choreographically on the pathway of really exploring new possibilities, and through movement, through restriction, using our disabilities as a source of possibilities. And before long, within 2 years after my accident, I was back in a ballet class in New York at Steps on Broadway. I was invited to do some classes and work with a woman named Kitty Lunn in New York, who had her own company, Infinity Dance Theatre. Two friends of mine were doing class at American Ballet Theatre, and Kitty had wheeled in her wheelchair and had translated and adapted the whole ballet class to her upper body. So my friends pretty much jumped on her and told her about me, and I was invited to go and work with her and her company, and trained and studied with her for 2 years on and off, and started getting, you know, choreographing my work there in New York, but also back in Australia. And the next step for me was I had found out about Kanduko Dance Company in the UK, so I was really looking at other possibilities for dancers with disabilities. And my accent was in 97, so there wasn't really a lot of opportunities at all, which is why I then started looking abroad, because in Australia there wasn't anything, and I felt like there was a lot of closed doors in Australia, and a lot of my friends and colleagues were all professional dancers, but for them, they just couldn't find a way, or didn't know a way, or, you know, they weren't ready to think outside that square box yet. So I then, worked in New York, and then when I did a summer intensive summer school with Kanduko Dance Company in 2001, and then from that, I was then invited to join the company, which I did in 2003, because it was a full-time contemporary dance company. It worked with dancers with and without disabilities, and they worked with lots of exciting choreographers. So I went and joined and moved to London, and pretty much have been there, I've been in the UK now for, 16 years.
Wow. And now you're located in...
Glasgow. Yeah. So after leaving Kanduko after 6 years, I then went on a leadership program as a future leader and artistic director in dance. And from that, I got a placement to shadow an artistic director. So I was always interested in Scottish Dance Theatre, which is Scotland's leading contemporary dance company. And also it was at the same size of a company that I would wanting to in the future to sort of be artistic director of or manage and work with. So I went and chatted with Janet Smith and the company at Scottish Dance Theatre. And then I was offered a job as associate director with the company, which I did for 2 years, and choreographed work with the company and taught for the company. And then I pretty much stayed in Scotland and have continued developing my own work since then with my own company, Mark Brew Company. So I work, you know, with dancers without disabilities, but it's very much focused on the choreographic work of what I'm wanting to achieve as a choreographer. So I then bring the dancers and the collaborators together that I want to work with for each project.
Mm-hmm. And you also your path crossed with Axis Dance.
Yeah, I mean, my path did cross a long time ago when I was looking at other possibilities for companies to work with and to learn from, and I'd been in touch with Judith Smith. But at the time when I was looking, you know, to join a company again, it just happened that Kanduko were more financially stable and were able to offer a full-time job and also with a regular pay salary,
which is always nice.
And here at Axis in the time, the dancers weren't full-time, so they were paid for their time, but I'd find it hard to survive. So I took the job with Kanduko, but I've always had an association with Axis.
And now you're their guest artistic director,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, so I first got to work with the company again in 2011. Judith had invited. She'd been following me and stalking me and so forth. so we'd always, kept in touch. And then she invited me after I left Kanduko to create a work for the company in 2011. So the first work I created was Full of Words. That has been a company favorite and toured for a few years. And then I've been working with the company ever since, coming back as guest artistic director to teach for the company, to sort of support the dancers as well on tour. And then also I choreographed a new work for the company in 2014, Could Divide, which is currently in the rep. So, that relationship's been ongoing, and I've been coming back to work with the company here in Oakland ever since, and every year since 2014.
And then you just went to Australia, right?
Yes.
Did you just do the performance in Australia?
Yes, I've been to Australia. I was there for the Australian Performing Arts Market, networking for my own work. I was also just in Brazil, where I was doing a Brazil collaboration between Scotland and Brazil and created new work with Natalia Malo and Giselle Calazans, which premiered in Sao Paulo before our coming back here for the summer intensive. And that will also have its UK premiere in September as part of the Unlimited Festival in Glasgow, which is a festival celebrating work by disabled and deaf artists.
Oh, wow. So that's in September in
Glasgow.
Yeah,
it is.
So everybody, let's go to Glasgow in September.
Yes.
So these questions are from the participants of the summer intensive, and one of them is like, who has been your most influential inspiration in the field?
In the field of physically integrated dance?
Yeah, I think so. Or before or after?
Yeah, well, I think before my accident acquiring my disability, I mean, I grew up watching, I don't know if it's going to show my age, but, you know, lovely, you know, musicals, TV musicals, films. So, you know, Gene Kelly, Fred Astaire, those wonderful performers. I grew up just watching and wanting to be and started dancing around, you know, my mother's living room. And I was very much into acrobatics as well, which is sort of why she ended up putting me into dance class, because I had all this energy. And then when I sort of went and started my formal training at 11, I had no idea what classical ballet was before then. I'd just done jazz dance, you know, once a week by a traveling teacher who'd come to my local village. So I opened up a whole new world again, I'm saying. I had a new vocabulary, and I didn't really know where I fitted in, but I was always loved a challenge. So I then got more into the classical ballet, and also, you know, it didn't come natural to me. And I don't know who it would come naturally to, but I loved the challenge of the technique. So I really took that on, but naturally I was more, you know, suited to contemporary dance and that type of work. But I really wanted to get the ballet out of my system. But through the ballet world, you know, Baryshnikov, Nureyev, you know, those, wonderful dancers who have been before.
So who really was your role models after your injury?
After my accident, I didn't really have any.
Yeah.
I mean, there weren't any, you know. Yeah, and that's why I think I mentioned earlier why I ended up leaving Australia, because I felt like I was the only one.
Yeah.
And then when I got this opportunity to go and work in New York with Kitty Lund, like, I was able to learn from her. So that was like, oh, someone who had a dance technique and had dance training and was a dancer and acquired a disability and had learned how to translate techniques to her own body. So I sort of took those learnings, and she sort of helped me grow and grow my confidence. But then I feel like there was more to that than just, you know, translating a technique. And choreographically, you know, I've always had an interest and worked creating my own work. So I had then taken that and then wanting to develop and was curious about the possibilities. So I think when I joined Kenduko, I was very much wanting to learn from Celeste Daneker, who was the artistic director. And she started the company with Adam Benjamin. And Celeste was also a dancer and acquired her disability from a fall and got a spinal cord injury. So working under her and her being my sort of artistic director and leader was definitely, a really good role model and a motivation and someone who I wanted to work for. So I really grew and was pushed from working with Kenduko and working under Celeste Daneker.
So when you started doing your own work, what sort of inspiration you had? One of the questions people really wanted to know, like, how do you start making your performances?
Work.
Like,
yeah.
You know, we talked about it here in the intensive. Some people really wanted to know, how does Mark Brew make?
Yeah. I mean, for me, I enjoy living, and I think having moments where you can be still and live, you know, and see what's going on around you, you know, going, seeing work, going to galleries, being inspired by, you know, the world around us does influence me in my work. I'm very interested in relationships, so I'm always watching people and how they communicate through everyday gesture. I'm always curious also about environments and different environments we can create. And how we can create that as a possibility for performance and what that enables you to do as a performer and as a disabled performer. So, for instance, a new outdoor work I wanted to create, I got the idea when I was in Rio de Janeiro on a beach on sand. I made my way on the sand and just was laying there and had this beautiful view of the water. And I started thinking about being on an island and, you know, being isolated, and it made me think about Australia, and in Australia, you know, in a way quite isolated from the rest of the world, and how without that, you know, influence that, you know, that you get from the rest of the world, you know, what happens with that, you know, without the constant influence. I mean, TV and that has changed that, But also then being in Scotland and the whole thing about identity and identity as a country that's also attached to the rest of the UK. So that sort of sparked those ideas and those interests. So I then put in for funding through the Commonwealth Games and the Cultural Fund around the Commonwealth Games that were going to be in Glasgow around the idea of creating an island that was a site-specific piece that would get transferred to different places. And that was called Island, and that was with a little I with the sort of two brackets around it, and then the land, so the I representing identity and isolation, and the I, the shape of an island, and land, looking at that land and ownership. And that was made on 6 tons of sand. So the idea is that there's a set underneath it that almost looks like a ship that's been shipwrecked, and it has a pole that comes out the middle of the sand, and it has like a rope ladder made out of bamboo. It's almost like the sort of mask of a ship. So that sort of began my new work called Ireland, which has then toured around the world the last 2 years to different locations, from, you know, church cathedrals where, you know, the sand gets dumped on the set, and then to like being on the promenade of the beach behind you, to being, you know, in a high street, you know, in the shopping district. So it's really lovely to take this piece of paradise and then place it in different locations. So that's just one idea and how that came about. But yeah, I mean, I think through living, I get inspired and intrigued and curious, and then start questioning, and then I think, oh, how do I create that? And often my mind works in images, so I start getting these images, and then I thought, okay, maybe I can start pasting those images together.
Awesome.
And then I do. And now also my own movement vocabulary has started to influence my work again, because after my accident, I stopped using my own movement, because I thought, oh, you know, is that useful? Is that interesting? So as a choreographer, I started exploring, like, is my movement interesting? And then through lots of, you know, research and development and sharings and showings of the work I was creating that was developed from my own body and my own physicality, people were interested and intrigued by that. So now I've sort of encompassed that into my process as well. So I would teach an arm phrase to dancers and then see how they embody that and make it their own and use the rest of their body. I then teach floor phrase and see how people will embody that, not trying to simulate my movement with a disability, but how they take, you know, the weight and the qualities of that movement and encompass it in their own bodies, and then how they can manipulate it and make it their own as well.
So I remember you saying a while back that you sort of feel like you have come like a
full circle. Yeah, definitely, because when I first started choreographing, when I was a little wee lad, I was always like in the mirror, in front of the mirror, creating up the material and then teaching the material. You know, where now there is, you know, I suppose for me, a more formalized approach of the idea and concept. How do I generate tasks around that idea to sort of to create the movement material that I want? What movement material am I interested in as a mover myself? And how through my body and my physicality can that enable other possibilities? I then often give tasks around restriction, because often I feel like dancers use their whole body, but then if I start restricting their parts of their body, what they can do with it, creates other possibilities as well. And as I mentioned about relationships, I want people to be people on stage. I don't want them to go into dancer mode. Yeah, so connecting through body language, through eye contact, and really being present in the moment, not just fulfilling lovely shapes.
Great. And so if I would create a performance only for Mark Brew, what are the most satisfying things when you go and see performance yourself?
I think for me, I'm definitely drawn to human interaction and for it to be honest and real. I'm always like, keep it real. but also the physicality, you know, and the subtleness and the detail. Often through my lighting, I don't like to show everything. You know, I like there to be really focused lighting on body parts and whole body, and, you know, and for our eyes to start to really focus on detail as well as the whole picture.
Wonderful. So, this is the very first episode.
Oh,
so
how exciting.
So, we have one more task.
Yes.
We need to come up with a name.
Oh.
So, Mark Brew, what would you call this podcast?
It's a podcast.
Because, you know, it's a really honor to have you as the first guest.
Yes, yeah.
So, we should just brainstorm, like, words.
Yes.
Like,
well, I'm wondering whether, does it need to have dance in it, you know, as the essence? Or,
yeah, I think we should have dance,
you know,
in it. Or movement.
Yeah, it could be dance cast. I don't know.
Oh, I like that.
Instead of
dance
a podcast,
cast.
It's a dance cast. You know, broadcasting, you know, to the dance community.
At least we can call this Mark Bruce
dance
cast.
Yeah. Let's do that.
So, one more question. As a performer, how do you calm yourself down before the performance?
Yeah.
I think this comes all from the choreography. So you gave us tasks to make a piece, and then we were performing it. And I think a lot of people were very nervous.
Yes, yeah.
So what do you do before performance?
Yeah,
like, do you have your routine? Like,
take
two shots of
tequila.
No,
take
I don't
my ibuprofen.
Well,
I never usually eat before a show. I always eat after a show. But I think for me, you know, it depends. Like, you know, at the moment I'm touring a new solo work of mine called For Now I Am. And that's very much just me. So I really need to get into that zone. You know, and it is looking about when I work up in a hospital and sort of rediscover my body. So I do revisit those moments and just, like, go through my head. And I have, you know, some peaceful moments on my own and just, like, going through the movement peacefully on my own. As a warm-up, but also, you know, through my mind. But then if I'm doing a group work and the energy needs to be more uplifting, then we do a real fun, you know, grouping and gathering and grounding. Yeah, so coming together, connecting each other in a circle and just letting our energy out, putting on a good song just to let, you know, to just let all that energy come out, that nervous energy, and then ready to get a focus and let's go, let's do it.
Great. So so you have your own company called Mark Brew.
Company.
And what is the website?
www.markbrew.com, and that's Mark with a C, M-A-R-C, and Brew, as in you brew your own beer, or brew coffee or brew tea, B-R-E-W, so markbrew.com.
And then about this Axis work is www.axisdance.org.
So AXISDANCE.org.
Great. Anything else you want to share?
No. Come and see our work. Engage in.
When is your solo
online
performance going to be?
Well, we don't have any dates here in America yet, but maybe in the future. But I've just finished a whole round of performances of that for this year. But next year we're looking at touring to Australia as well.
Oh, wow.